Welcome to The Greg Bennett Show, presented by Any Question. I am your host, Greg Bennett. And this episode was first recorded last year with arguably the greatest triathlete to ever do the sport, Nicholas Spierig. And the reason I'm sharing this episode again is Nicholas Spierig, after almost 30 years in the sport, has done her final race this past weekend, September 9th. And I wanted to make sure that my show, my listeners, we celebrate Nicholas Spierig. She truly has been at the pointy end of the sport for her entire career, from when she was a junior all the way through to Olympic gold in London, when she outsprinted Lisa Norden, one of the most remarkable sprint finishes we've ever seen in the sport. She then backed that up with a silver medal in Rio only 4 years later, and that was after having her first child. She's had three children. She did a law degree during her career as well. And honestly, even this past year, in her final year, she still went and broke 8 hours for the Ironman in the sub-7, sub-8. She went and won her race at the Collins Cup for Team Europe, which ended up dominating. And so she's leaving on a high. She's leaving still winning. And honestly, not only is she one of the greatest athletes to ever do the sport, she's been a long, long time friend of both Laura and mine, that I just wanted to make sure that we take this time to celebrate Nicholas Spierig. I wanted to personally thank her for all the entertainment and inspiration from her career. Just truly one of the all-time greats. Nicola, all the very, very best for your future endeavors. I will bring you back on this show so we can sort of go through it all again. But I did already have this one. I didn't want to have to redo it for your sake. But here it is, the episode with Nicola Spierig, which was done last November. A little bit of housekeeping before we go on. I want to thank you all so much for listening and sharing, and of course your feedback. I do take all of it on board, and I do truly appreciate it. And a reminder to go check out Any Question. My business partner, Ed Baker, and I are building a Q&A platform, where we want to make sure that we allow access to all the greatest minds and thought leaders in the world, to everybody in the world. So go on there, ask the almost 500 plus experts we have now a question. You can listen to all of their answers. It's free for the first hour. So go check it out, Any Question, and I'd love your support and feedback on what we're doing at Any Question as well. So please, you know, reach out to me and let me know what you think. But enjoy this one. Nicholas Spierig, thank you again. And remember, success comes to those who endure just one moment longer. All right, today I'm joined by the greatest female Olympian in the sport of triathlon. Most athletes are lucky to get 5 years on top of the sport in their chosen sports. My guest today has been on top for 20 years, 5 Olympics, 1 gold, 1 silver, 2 sixth, and a 19th. Unbelievable. 116 ITU starts with 26 wins. Add to that 6 European titles, a junior world title, Ironman, and numerous half Ironman distance victories, and a stellar running career that has seen her run a 2:37 marathon at the European Athletic Championships. Oh, and along the way, she married Rito Hook, a remarkable professional athlete on his own right, and had 3 children. And if that's not enough, she completed a law degree. Unbelievable. I'm exhausted. Anyway, she's been a great friend to Laura and I for over 2 decades, and it's just a tremendous honor and privilege to have her on the show today. So welcome, and thanks for joining us on The Greg Bennett Show, Nicola Spierig. How are you?
Hi, Greg. Hi, Laura. It's an honor to be here, and thank you very much for this long introduction.
I'm exhausted from that introduction, and I cut it down. You've been busy. And yes, as you said, Laura has joined us today. My goodness, Laura, it's taken me a while to get you back on the show as well, so welcome.
Thank you. I didn't want to miss this one with you, Nicola. What a career to date. So excited to speak with you here.
Well, you know, this took us almost, 2 years of trying to coordinate times and to finally get you on the show?
Yeah, as you said, I've been busy, you've been busy, so.
I know. Well, you've also got, I took out in that introduction, you've got your foundation and the kids' races and everything else that you're doing as well.
Yes. Exactly.
I am baffled how you're doing.
Taking some time as well, but it's very nice.
Mm. And congrats on your recent win, Challenge Mallorca. It was amazing.
Thank you very much. Yes, we were here with the family, school holidays, training camp, and racing combined. So busy again.
And where are you now? Are you back home, or are you in Mallorca still?
The family just traveled home, and I still have 3 or 4 days here before I join them again back home.
Oh, nice. Leisurely time now.
Kind of. just training and working up all the stuff that piled up on my computer and doing podcasts with you. And but yes. No kids' noise in the background, so that's
good. I know. It must feel so good. For everybody, we met, and I was trying to think, was it back at the Lausanne World Championships in 98? Did we meet there?
Wow.
Probably. I was there, and you were there, so yeah. We probably met there, yes. Probably also through Rito and the other Swiss guys.
Absolutely. I know. It's amazing. It's a long time ago. Well, look, today I want to sort of, you know, get to know you a little bit better, look back at your past and your career, your recent events. I also want to dissect just how you're able to manage everything that you've got on the table. It's just absolutely extraordinary to me how you can manage the family and the foundations and the, you know, basically being one of the greatest at every time you turn up to a race, you affect it. And what was impressive a couple of weeks ago when we did the show together with all the Olympic champions from 2008, and each and every one of them, Emma Snosil, now Fredino, Gwen Jorgensen, Flora Duffy, they all mentioned you as being a player in their race. At each of the Olympics, you haven't just been a tourist at the Olympics. You've gone there and you've either won, medaled, or had a massive impact on the race itself. So I kind of want to just look at all of that as well. So there's a lot to cover. I know we've started with some general chit-chat. What I'd like to do is just start by recapping this year, just because it's fresh, and then we'll look at rewinding the clock and looking at your career from the start. But this year, a lot of half Ironman racing, half distance, plus an Olympics thrown in the middle. What was the focus, or were you using those sort of half races as training for the Olympics, or how was that work for you?
Yes, the highlight of the year, or the big goal, was clearly the Olympics for me. But with Brett Sutton as a coach, we have also always used half distance races to get fit in the preparation. For example, in 2012, before the Olympics in London, I think I did a half Ironman 13 days before the Olympics. So everyone thought I was completely crazy, but it worked out. I still won. So it works for me. I like those races as preparation races. And after the Olympics now, it was also just keeping fit and getting some more experience over the longer distances, because the next goal next year will be over a long distance race. So it was fun to have some more races and just get some more experience.
What is that? Tell us a little bit about that big goal next year.
The next big goal is the sub-8 project.
Oh yes.
It's two women try to do an Ironman or an Ironman distance under 8 hours, and two men try to do the Ironman distance under 7 hours, kind of like the marathon project where they try to go under 2 hours. So it's going to be very interesting. Of course, we're trying to choose a fast course, and we are allowed to have some pacemakers, so it won't be a normal Ironman, but it will still be very, very difficult to get close to those 8 hours or under.
So what sort of times have you got to do if you break down the Ironman? Have you got a math in your mind of what you'd like to be doing there?
We still have to discuss a lot, and there are different tactics, of course. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this project. Like, for example, Christian Blumenfeld, I think he was, I'm not sure if I heard it in one of your podcasts or an interview he gave, where he said he doesn't even want to ride much faster, but he wants to run the marathon much faster than normally in Ironman, like a 220 or close to that. So it depends what tactics you have, and also, of course, what pacemakers you have and how you use them. There's still a lot to discuss, but I think he's kind of right that you have, of course, you have to do all the 3D pins really fast. Like I'm still having to get over the fast times in all the disciplines. I think you have to ride about a 42K average over the 180K and still run like a 2:45 marathon or something to make the time. But we are trying to figure it out, and I rely on some help of the pacemakers as well.
And do you get to pick your pacemakers? Like, do you get to have guy like some guys or yes. is it all women or?
We are still discussing, but I think the organizers want us to have women as pacemakers, and that of course makes it quite difficult to find, especially like athletes who can ride that fast over 180K. You are allowed to kind of have riders for like only 40K and then change. But I think in total, we're only allowed to have 8 pacemakers over all the disciplines. So yeah, it will be tricky to find fast enough riders, female riders to actually go those 42K per hour over 180K.
Yeah, it's actually going to be quite a process just managing all the people and figuring out how to expend the energy the right way.
Yes, and you know, the good athletes, of course, have their own races and their own race season. And yes, it's going to be tricky. But yeah, that's also, I guess, that's also the challenge about it, to handle everything and to manage everything and to find the right people. And we are onto it now.
Laura, are you ready to make a comeback?
Yeah,
need a pacemaker. Yes. Laura hasn't swum over a kilometer in 6 years.
But. Oh, we still have time. It's not a problem.
Yeah, what's the date? What's the cutoff?
What actually interests me, when I first heard about this project, I was like, oh, no way, I'm going to be 40 and it's after the Olympics and I will be tired. But it's also like, the things around, like the project is organized by Phoenix, and Phoenix also has a foundation with basically exactly the same goal than my foundation. They want to get as many kids as possible active, to teach them how sports can influence their life, how sport is good for them. And the Sub-8 project is actually to find money for the foundation and to inspire all as many people as possible to follow their dreams. And even if a goal sounds as impossible as that Sub-8 project, to inspire them to try it and to go for it. And I think that was what I like about it, to just try and inspire other people and try to earn as much money as possible for the foundation and for the kids. So for me, this thought behind it is very important as well.
That's fantastic. It gives you a great platform. And it was one thing when I walked away from the conversation with you and the other ladies in the Olympic Champions episode that we did, I really left going, wow, what an impressive group of women that. And you even said in the show, I just wanted to win a race. And all of a sudden I had all this responsibility to become like this person that's going to have foundations and kids races and use the Olympic gold for more than just putting it around your neck. It's actually, it's a useful to be able to reach people and inspire people. And I left that conversation going, wow, you know, and you really stood out in that because you have gone about since your 2012, because you are a bit of an introvert and then having to go, hang on, I've got this gold medal. Now I've got to be this like, ta-da, look at me, jazz hands. And I think that's what you've taken on really well. And to hear you just speak like you just did about, you know, the Phoenix Foundation aligning with your foundation and this platform and the fact that you're going to try and break sub-8 hours for an Ironman, also children can follow their dreams. You hear that, kids?
Well, not just kids. Not just that. That's just also.
Oh, not just kids. Everybody. Yes. Okay. Everybody, of course.
Everybody. Of course. Also you. Now, yes. It's as you say, like, it wasn't my goal or my intention when I started sports or started to become a professional, of course, to have a foundation and to inspire. It was my goal just to follow my dream and win races. But it took me quite a while to realize that I can inspire people. And as you say, I'm not the kind of person who loves to be in the public and loves to speak and loves to be an idol, but it's actually, it also gives me a lot to see those kids and see other people being inspired. It's amazing to see. And we do have those kids' races. We do have the foundation. And now through Phoenix, we have the possibility to connect it internationally, like worldwide. We try to, or we are connecting the kids' races with kids' series in Australia, in Poland, now with Javier Gomez in Spain, with Alistair Brownlee will be a kids' series in England. So it's amazing now to see how it spreads, like internationally. And also the school programs, they started in Poland and now we are implementing it in Switzerland, and we are talking to other countries like Greece, and that's really, really nice to see what an impact it can have and that I can play my role in it and yes, be a bit of an inspiration for those people and those kids.
Well, it's absolutely amazing. Good on you. Mm-hmm. And the sport's all better for you, and the world is better for you in the terms of inspiring young people for primarily, and all of us to some degree, to follow our dreams and stuff. So absolutely fantastic. Before we go on to rewind in the clock, I do want to just have a quick look at the Olympics, Tokyo. There was a photo of you that you put out running around the track before the Olympics. And boy, did you look ready. And I know you're not allowed to say anymore somebody looks fit, because I don't want to upset people, but you had a look about you that looked like you were ready to race the Olympic Games. Let me put it that way.
There's a pack of six or something.
There was a six pack located. And you did look like you were ready. Sixth at the Olympics, thoughts, solid event, takeaways. What do you think?
As you said, I thought the same. I was very happy to get to the Olympics, and looking back at the preparation and being really happy with the preparation. Like that was my main goal, to have a preparation without injuries, where I could really train again as I wanted. I had really good races before the Olympics. I won the European Championships over the half distance before really good people like Anne Haug. I did my personal best times in 10K run races, several 10K run races.
What was that? So, I'm going to butt in. What was that? What was your course?
Well, it wasn't that fast, but I just came from a training camp. I don't know. It was like 33:20 or something close to that. I'm not sure. But it was clearly personal best, so I was happy.
Laura, would
and
you take that right now?
I would definitely take that. Can I have that?
Yeah, you know, after three kids, it's good. It's not too bad.
Good. That's what we're saying.
Sure.
All right.
And I was really happy. That was my main goal, to get to the Olympics, to say I had a great preparation and I am in the mix, so I have the chance to win the medal. And I think that was the case. At the race, at the day itself, it was raining. It was very funny because everyone prepared for a hot and humid day, and it was raining. And I didn't mind. I think it was just important to adapt to the situation. I think I did that well. I just swam a bit too slow. The first six had a bit more as 1 minute gap after the swim. And I think the swim wasn't too bad because it was just the first six swimming really fast, and then all the other fast people who swim normally fast were not more than 20 seconds in front of me. So that's actually a good swim for me. But the first six were just a little bit too fast. And then on the bike course, I tried my best, but I didn't have much help in my pack. So to ride against the six in the front was a huge challenge. And I think also I was happy with my performance. I was just the first six did really well on the bike. They were working together really well. So I could close the gap a little bit, but not enough. And on the run, again, that's why I was actually happy when I was running to the finish line, because I thought I really did my best in that race. I got sixth. I didn't get the medal I was basically aiming for, but that's sports. I was I did get a medal the last two Olympics, so I can't complain. And I can look back and say, I wouldn't change anything. I don't see anything that I could have done better. So I'm happy with the performance. And I think I can also say there are three athletes on the podium who really earned it, who showed a really great race. So that's always also good, I think, to look up at the podium and say, well, those are athletes that deserved it and that showed a great performance.
Well said. I think I couldn't agree more. And it was nice to, even when Flora spoke and she said, yeah, I had a nice group up front. And the only person I was worried about, was Nicola. And then I saw she was kind of on her own driving that pack. And I thought, okay. We're good.
Okay. Yeah, but it was good to hear that she was worried about me. That shows that.
Yes, I know. Well, I do want to step through each of your Olympics a little bit later, but right now I just want to move on so we can all get to know you a little bit more, and maybe just wind the clock back and tell us about, you know, when your passion for triathlon and endurance sports sort of began. How old were you and where were you and what did that look like?
I was growing up in a family. I had a sister and a brother, and I had parents who were sports teachers. So I was lucky to be able to try out a lot of different sports. I was playing basketball for a long time. In winter, we were skiing and snowboarding. I was swimming early in a swim club and doing lots of sports also in some local clubs in the village. So I think from early on, I found that passion of just for sports in general. I really love to move and to be active. And I also played basketball until high school, like quite a long time, and loved running. I did some run races, got second twice in the junior cross-country European Championships. So the Athletics Federation was quite interested in me as well. But like at the age of 17, around that, I had to kind of choose sports because it was just too much, too many races, too many trainings that I couldn't fit it all in. And I just thought that I couldn't imagine to just run day in, day out. I just, as a 17-year-old, I was like, oh my God, that must be boring to just always mm-hmm. run. So with triathlon, at least I could still do three sports in one or three disciplines in one sports. It was around that time also that triathlon became an Olympic sport in 2000 in Sydney. Mm. And I knew the athletes going there, like I knew the Swiss women going to Sydney. I also had already beaten the third woman a few times. So the Olympic dream also developed there. And I thought, well, maybe I could go to the Olympics, to the next Olympics. So to me, that was the stage when I chose triathlon and started to train more seriously. And also around that time, I became first-time junior European champion in triathlon. 98, you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I became fifth at my first junior worlds in Lausanne. So I started to have some good results. And
you were only 16 more seriously. There.
Yes, 16? Exactly. Yeah. So I had a few more years in the junior category.
Yeah.
Just entered it, actually.
Yeah, I got fifth in Lausanne, then I got second in Montreal, third, I think, in Perth, and then I finally won the last time in Edmonton.
Gee, so. What a slow learner, huh?
Yeah. Took me 4 years.
To win the world with junior.
Yes.
Well done. I thought wow. You actually, it's funny looking at that resume, it's like I just remember you being on the scene in that late 90s, early noughties there, and it was kind of like, yeah, you're a junior. That kind of almost baffles my mind. Some of you, we were talking to Helen, Laura and I were talking to Helen Jenkins and Mark Jenkins yesterday, and I feel like you and Helen never aged.
No.
It was like this because I knew you from when you were 16, and so you were always just, I don't
you
know.
Think you're just the same age.
Yeah, because you thought you were always just the same age. So
Yeah.
All stayed the same.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, and the other thing, have you ever played one-on-one basketball against Merinda Carfrey?
No, I never have done that.
She's a big
this, I think we're going to set up a little duel here.
Yeah.
Really? She played basketball as well?
She's running around saying she's the greatest basketball player and that she could easily take you down.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, she is. The best runners in the sport.
Two of the best runners in the sport have basketball.
That's yeah, it's funny because we are both not that tall. So, both like more the playmakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talent and agility.
Yes, exactly.
So you found triathlon. Was there any moment, was it those junior worlds and things that made you think, I mean, you kind of mentioned you'd watched your Swiss counterparts at the 2000 Olympics and you're like, oh, I could probably make that team. But was there one moment, was there one race, or was it over time that you were like, this could be a career or this could be something that I do? What was it like for you in that respect?
Well, I mentioned my parents were sports teachers, but they were more teachers. Like education was always really important. And I never, for a long time, I never really thought of triathlon as a job, like as work. It was just my passion, and I did normal school, I did normal high school, and then I did normal studies besides doing triathlon. So I never felt I had to choose or I had to become a professional. I just got better and better, had better results, and of course then qualifying for Athens for my first Olympics in 2004, I definitely thought, well, being an Olympian is not too bad. But yes, for me, it was never like there was never that one race or one point where I thought, well, now I'm a professional or now I made it.
Do you look at yourself now as a professional athlete? I mean,
not anymore. Yes. Brett is always joking that I'm the world's fastest age grouper. Because I always had something like besides sports. There were only 2 years in my career where I would say I was a professional, and that was 2010. I finished my studies, my law studies, and finally I was like, yes, well, now I'm a professional. Now I'm preparing the Olympics in London, like 2 years completely as a professional athlete. And afterwards, I had a family. I became pregnant with our first baby. So then, yes, now I would not say I'm a professional anymore because I'm, as you said, I'm a mom. I have a foundation. I have a triathlon series, kids triathlon series. So my life is pretty full, and I know how a professional triathlon life looks like normally. So no, I wouldn't say that's a normal professional life.
Well, you maximized your two years as a professional.
Exactly. I really enjoyed those 2 years. So,
and I think you're probably the best age grouper in the sport of triathlon.
Yeah.
When I look at the 20 years, I'd put you probably ranked number one.
Let's put that in
all
the
age
intro.
Groupers. Yeah. Next time I'm going to rewrite that introduction, redo it, and just thank say, you. I am sitting with the world's number one age group triathlete.
Yes, that's what Brett always says. So thank you. It's nothing new to me.
We've talked to a lot about your success, but have you had moments where you feel like giving it away and quitting? I know you've had a few crashes and broken your hand and done all sorts of things. Have you ever, what have been some of the down times that you've had to deal with and come back?
Yeah, I did have a few injuries, and especially with the first ones, I definitely struggled. I was always really frustrated because I think all athletes know that time where you're so frustrated because you can't work on your goals as you want to, you can't move forward, you have this annoying injury and have to do stuff to heal and to get better, but it doesn't really bring you closer to your goal. I think I learned to deal better with those times and to concentrate on what I can do, not what I can't do, and concentrate on stuff I can probably even improve in those times of injuries. I always loved the sport, and I never really had the thought of giving it up except after London, very clearly planned to have a family, and I didn't know how my body would react, how I would react mentally, if I would even want to race anymore, if we could organize it with a family. So after London, I was quite prepared to give it all up, just because I didn't know how it would work out with a family. And the same was after Rio, 4 years later, when we had our second child. I left it completely open if I would continue or not, because I just wanted to see how it works out and if it would still be the best for the family to continue.
How many crashes have you had? Have you had a few bike crashes? And what happened with that, your broken hand, and how did you get yourself going there?
I was actually pretty lucky with crashes. I had probably 3 crashes in races. But and funny enough, the first one, I think it was the first one, was in 2001 at my last junior world championships, what we were just talking about before. I was so angry with myself that I did crash that I won the race afterwards and became junior world champion. So I wasn't really injured. I was just angry. Then I had the crash, yes, 2016, probably was the worst, or that one of the 2 worst crashes I had, where I broke my hand. And the problem was, it was just a short time before the Olympics in Rio. So it was in Abu Dhabi, the first international race. I called a specialist in Switzerland and sent him the pictures from Abu Dhabi from the hospital. And he said, well, yes, broken hand, 6 weeks of complete rest. And I told him, well, that's not an option. Go back and have a think about it. And he was pretty stunned because, of course, he was a specialist. And lucky enough, he was he was coming back and said, okay, there's another option. We can have an operation and put in 3 plates and 23 screws, and then it's pretty fixed and you can start earlier. And I said, okay, I'm coming back to Switzerland, and you do that the next day. So he turned up on Sunday with a PowerPoint presentation of 3 different options. He was really well prepared. So I must have been pretty firm with him to have this effect on him, but I was really happy. And during the operation, I actually sent Rito on the other side of the, I only have my arm paralyzed. I could hear everything. But they have this, how do you say, this curtain, right? So you can't see what they actually operate on your hand. So I told Rito he should go to the other side and have a look what they do. I just could hear how nervous they were and how they forgot the tool in the car.
That screwed up, you know.
And stuff like that.
So I could just see Rito going,
I put a lot of pressure on them.
My fault?
Oh my god!
Oh my god! The poor bugger.
But, no. Like, oh. Well, obviously they did a great job, and I was on the turbo again, I think 1 or 2 days later, and it was a weird situation because we said, okay, the goal is still to have a medal chance at the Olympics, and I still want to be among the best in a basically. I don't know, it was 2 or 3 months out of the Olympics. And I tried to train, like preparing the Olympics, but at the same time, I couldn't lace my shoes myself. I couldn't do my hair up myself. So I was completely helpless with one hand. So Rita learned a lot of new things, like doing a ponytail and everything. it was a very interesting time, and I'm quite proud because we went to Rio, to the Olympics, and I had to change the whole plan. Like Brett and I had to cancel all the international races. I hadn't seen the other girls in a race since some of them, like Gwen, I didn't race for 4 years, so I had no idea where I stood and was pretty nervous. And I think, yes, I did extremely well under those circumstances.
That was a great race. Let's step through each of the Olympics now, because I think it's quite a journey in itself. 2004, you qualify firstly, that feeling of qualifying for your first Olympics?
Yes, it was exhausting because we had to go. It was about having...
That is not the reply I was hoping to hear. You were qualified for the first Olympics. A deep breath and just saying it's exhausting.
I can just remember it. Now, seriously, the qualification. I understand how, like, it's so hard for those athletes, like, being just at that line where maybe you make it, maybe not, and you have to earn those points at all those races. And I think I had, within 5 weeks, I had to do 4 races in 4 different continents just to be the third Swiss girl and to have enough points and everything. So that was pretty stressful. But yes, of course, I was extremely happy to having qualified for the Olympics, and that was basically the goal, like just to go there and to enjoy the Olympics and to have the experience. And it was amazing. Rita was there as well, so we could enjoy the Olympics, both of us together. I was a bit injured after that exhausting qualification, so I didn't expect much of the Olympics itself. I was just enjoying it. And actually, funny enough, even back then, the Olympic champion there, Kate Allen, came up to me and thanked me for my work on the bike I had done. So already there, I played a little role for the Olympic champion.
Of course.
There you go. And this is what I love about this story, because your impact across the board is really great. And then we move on to 08. Emma Frodeno, Emma Snowsill, you know, on our discussion a couple of weeks ago, said that she was just keeping an eye on the two Swiss girls, you and Daniela, in 08. So you were mentioned in her Olympic Games. And and here, Laura, you were a part of this one too, right? So you guys were really close, 4th and 6th, right? You were,
yeah, exactly. For me, it was a big change between 2004 and 2008, because until 2005, I was coached by my father. He coached me for basically 15 years, and I think he did an amazing job. Like, it's not easy at all to coach a young athlete through puberty, to make her an Olympian and to coach her so that she still loves the sport. So he did really, really well. I was extremely happy with him. But there was, after the Olympics, there was a point where I knew that if I wanted to be even better and to not just participate, but to have a chance to win a medal or to have a top 10 result, I needed to change something. And he was too kind to push me, which was perfect, because our father-daughter relationship was much more important. And I still train with him and I still enjoy spending time with him. And I think that's the reason why, because he was also always like really kind. But pushing myself the whole time was not getting me where I wanted to go. So there was a time in 2006 where I changed coaches and went to Brett. That was a huge change for me, to go to an international squad, go to a completely different Australian coach. And 2008, I was much more competitive, I think. I wasn't world class yet. I did have an outside chance to win a medal in case that we could have broken away on the bike or something special would have happened. But I was very happy with my 6th place. I think that was my level there, and I did a great race.
Oh, I think you should have been. Laura, did you feel like Nicola was coming? And do you often just remind her that you beat her at that Olympics?
Yes. With this stellar career. Yeah, no, that was an interesting one, I think, because of all of the front pack swimmers from 04 all retired. Yeah. And so it was kind of the girls from the second pack were now starting to come from behind. And so, yeah, that was always a threat from anybody who was up at the front a little bit more out of the swim.
Well, there was 10 seconds in it between you guys. I just looked up the results, so you can hang that over, Nicola, for the rest of the show, Laura. Well, until we get to 2012.
Yes, exactly. That's what I wanted to say. What was the gap 2012?
Tables turn, don't they, Nicola? So slow down, Laura. Gee whiz.
I just know I had to chase Laura the whole bike course in London.
Yeah, I have photos of that. I was like, what are you doing back there? Get off my wheel. Let's get to the front. We were in the same pack. Yeah, that was me. I was coming out of the water there. I was like, where is everyone?
I know.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So London. Do we skip over London? Is it really important?
No, not that much.
Let's do it. I love this. London
so
Olympics.
Good. So good.
Yeah, London nervous? Olympics.
I mean, you did
she was 2 years as a professional. So she
exactly.
Yes. So
I had 2 years as a professional. Yes, London was my big goal. I knew we wanted to start a family afterwards, so I was very excited about that race because preparation went almost perfect. I remember writing a letter to my team, to my teammates and my coach before the Olympics, just saying thank you for this amazing time, for the training, for the preparation. I just said, well, it was so nice. I've learned so much, and no matter how the Olympics turn out, it was worth it, and I really enjoyed it. So, for me, that time, even not knowing how the Olympics would turn out, was an amazing time. I will always remember it as one of the nicest times of my life. And I think if you can say that from a hard Olympic preparation, it's pretty cool. So yes. Almost everything went perfect. I had a great squad. I had guys I could train with the whole time. We had really nice training camps, and I just enjoyed the preparation. It was just all going well.
And the race itself. I mean, for people that haven't seen it, go YouTube the 2012 Olympic Games women's triathlon and the sprint finish. It really is one of the all-time great images we have in the sport of triathlon. It is.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it was really special. You and Lisa Norden, Erin Densham was with you, and Sarah True not far behind. But when you guys came onto that blue carpet, was it deafening sound? What was that moment especially? What was that like running on the blue carpet?
Well, I think, of course, if you're in the Olympics, it's always, probably always the most special Olympics, but the atmosphere in London was just amazing. Like, there were so many people, so many spectators. It was so loud. You couldn't hear when you shifted the gear. You couldn't hear anything. There was one corner on the run, the people weren't allowed to stand, and you had a ringing in your ears like you would have come out of the disco. Like, it was everywhere else, it was so loud. And of course, that was amazing. It pushed you to go faster. I can't remember any other race being even close as in an amazing atmosphere. And it was like this the whole Olympics. Like, the day before, I was riding somewhere with my bike, and I was riding on the pathway, like where normally only the people are only allowed to walk. And two policemen came towards me and stopped me and said, "You're not allowed to walk to ride here, and there's a fine." And I was like, "Well, but I'm competing in the Olympics." And they said, "Okay, just go on. You can ride wherever you want." So I was like, okay, thank you. So you just have the feeling that everyone was behind those Olympics and was enjoying it. I was really proud that the Olympics were in London. So the race itself, I swam fine. I came out of the water and saw all my main competitors, except Laura, of course. She was about 1.5 minutes in front. But
on her own.
Yes, on her own.
Hey, everybody, I'm going to do this on my own.
Yeah.
Bye.
but like Helen Jenkins, Lisa Norden, I saw all the names I had on my list. Basically, we were catching up the few in the front, Laura, quite fast. Like, we made up time pretty fast, so I wasn't too worried. And we were a big pack on the bike. So my plan was to just get off the bike with the front pack, run the same pace as the first ones, and then sprint, out sprint everyone in the end. Pretty simple. And but I had some signs of cramps already on the bike, and then on the run it got worse. Like after every turnaround, I felt those little cramps. After every change of pace, I felt signs of cramps. So I was pretty worried I would have a real cramp in the end. And I changed tactics. I didn't do the 200 meter fast sprint we were training for in a lot of training sessions, but I was deciding to build up the pace over a longer distance. And then in the end, I saw someone holding up a sign that Helen had dropped. So I knew she was gone, but we were still four athletes left. So I was just increasing the pace slowly and increasing it more. And finally, we got to the long blue carpet and I started to sprint. As I said, the atmosphere was amazing. And a lot of people were asking me afterwards if I knew that Lisa Norden got closer and closer again in the last few meters. And yes, I exactly knew exactly, because there was a big screen for the VIP people on the standing day. And the screen showed the race live. So I actually watched the screen and saw myself and Lisa coming closer again while we were sprinting. And I thought, oh my God. And I just, so yes, I knew she was getting closer. I knew it would get really, really close to the finish line. And I just thought of all the trainings we have done, of everything I put into this preparation. I thought of that might be the one and only chance I have to become Olympic champion. And I knew I just had to reach that finish line first, no matter how. And I think in the end, I ran more with my head than with my legs, because they were completely empty. But I somehow made it to that finish line. And in the first moment, I was just happy. It was all over. And we were lying there, and there was just, I think everyone was exhausted.
And then you didn't know for quite some time who had actually won, though. That's how close it was, right? Yes. But you had an inclination, right? You did have an inclination.
It was extremely close. And yes, as an athlete, I think you always have a feeling, like if you won or not. And of course, you don't rely on your feeling. At Olympic Games, it's way too important. So I was asking Lisa what she thought. And to my relief, she said, well, I think you won, but I'm happy about second place. And I thought, well, yes, I might also be happy about second place, but it's such a huge difference if you are Olympic champion or if you're second. I just need to know first definitely what it is, and then I can be happy about whatever it is. And yes, we needed to wait about, I don't know, about 8 minutes or certainly like more than just 2 or 3 minutes until they had looked at the finishing picture and everything and came out with the decision. And it seemed a long time to us while we were preparing for the award ceremony.
Unreal.
Probably felt like forever.
It probably felt like forever. I think did we all have breakfast the next morning?
Yes, we did.
Was it the next morning we had breakfast with you and Rita, right?
Yeah, going, exactly.
What? We're sitting with an Olympic champion? I think all of us were like, what? What just happened? Yes.
Yeah. if you become Olympic champion, it's really crazy, because everything happens so fast. Like, as I said, like only a few minutes later, there was the award ceremony. Then you, of course, have a lot of interviews. Then you have the press conference. Then you have the doping control. And like after 2 or 3 hours, you are allowed to have a shower. Like you're still in your clothes from the race, you know. Yeah. And then it gets to the Swiss house, and there's more interviews and TV and fans and dinner with your friends and family, and that's all amazing, but you have not a single moment to yourself or to think about what just happened. And I think that's why so many athletes say, well, it took me a long time to realize what happened and that I became Olympic champion or world champion, because it's there's so many things happening afterwards, and you don't have any time for yourself and to sit down and have a moment.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because I look back and I think, well, we had that breakfast the morning after, which we thought was really special. Yeah. But then it's been 9 years that you've been so busy since winning that Olympic gold that here we are finally having a chat. So that's the impact. Yeah. So,
it's pretty busy.
So Flora Duffy, who just won, we'll talk to you in 2030.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, life does get pretty hectic. I mean, it is wonderful. Congrats on that again. Amazing. And then I loved the race in Rio too. I thought that was really fun. I enjoyed, again, for people that haven't listened to it, when I have all the female Olympic champions from 2008 on, Gwen Jorgensen shares her thoughts on that race, and you were chiming in sharing your thoughts on this race in 2016 when you were slowing down and talking to each other and everything else. Give us a little bit of a recap on that. I know you shared the story 2 weeks ago, but if you can give us a recap for people that haven't listened to that episode of what was going on, 2016, you and Gwen have broken away from the field and are on the run. You happen to be doing all the leading and going, hang on, what's going on here? Take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, well, what I like about those five Olympics I've been is that each one has been completely different and each preparation has been completely different. So, as I said, for London, I was a professional athlete for 2 years and could really like focus on sports and on myself and being self-centered. And then for Rio, everything was different. Like I was a mom, had a family. I was the Olympic champion, so I was the one being chased. And I, as we mentioned before, I had my hand broken a few months before. So it was a completely different preparation. We had to change everything. And that was the interesting part about it. Like, how can I be on the top again with completely different circumstances? And I'm pretty proud of the Olympics in Rio to win a medal again, to win silver this time. But for me, it was probably, in a way, it was almost more special than gold in London because I had my family there. I had Rita there, my husband, and I had Yannis there, our little son. And to share it with those two was really amazing, was really emotional. Yeah, how the race went. I had a good swim. Basically, all the favorites came out of the swim together. I tried to get away on the bike. I couldn't break away, but I think I could make it quite hard and tire some people, some fast runners out. And then I knew Gwen would be really fast on the run and really hard to follow. But I was determined to just hang on to her as long as I could. I suffered a lot in the first half of the run, but the positive was there was a gap between us two and the next two or three athletes. So at least I saw that as a positive and thought, well, it's really hard. I might not be able to hang on the whole run course, but I can get a gap between the other athletes and myself. But then surprisingly for me, Gwen let me lead after the first half, and I was quite surprised because she never did that in other races. So I thought, well, maybe she's not 100% convinced she can win, or she tries something new, or that's not bad. It's not bad for sure because I could run my own pace and I could slow down a bit and get a breath. But so there was a positive and
like, sweet, I could take a break.
Yes, exactly. So I was like, oh, okay, that's better. But we went into the headwind again, and I knew if I would lead in a headwind, I would have no chance to answer an attack of her afterwards in the tailwind. So I told her to lead again, and she wasn't willing to. She said, no, I was leading the first half. That was the point where I tried to just get her out of her rhythm and get her in a little conversation and try to just do something different to shake her up a little bit. And I just said, well, yes, but I already have a gold medal and you don't. So you have to
say that.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
So, look what I have. Nah.
You want one? You're going to earn it.
That is great.
But I was a bit scared because I knew we had like 25 seconds. And I thought, well, I can play for 10 seconds, but then we really have to go again. Otherwise, the other ones are coming from behind. Mm. So we didn't have much time. And yes. So, but it was quite funny because we normally, in triathlon, you never see that. We never do that. Mm. And it was something I discussed with Brett before because he said, well, Gwen is the faster runner than you. So if you can't drop her on the bike, you just need to try to get her out of her rhythm, to try to do something to disturb her because she's just running faster than you. And that's what I tried. And I think in the end, I only won the silver and she was better, but I'm proud because I did everything I could, like physically, mentally. I just tried all the tactics I had and I think that's what it is about, just to try your best to give your best and then be happy with the result.
I think that's my favorite line on all the podcasts I've done. Well, I have a gold medal, so what are you going to
do? You want one? Or
you
not?
Want one?
Well, she has one now too, so.
I know, yes, but she doesn't have a silver as well, so. Yeah. I know, that's just, I love
that's,
that.
That's what I will say at the next Olympics.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'd like to hear that.
No.
You might as well hang on for Paris.
No, huh? Not really.
It's a week away.
It's like a week away, seriously. Exactly. They're picking teams, I think, next week, aren't they? Laura,
yeah,
didn't you hear?
You're going to be focused until you go sub 8.
Well, that's it. You'll go sub 8 in 6 months.
You'll have the Olympics all the space.
Yeah. We'll talk some more off air, but we'll make this happen, everybody. Don't worry about it. Nicholas Grigg, 6th Olympics.
Probably not.
Outside of all these Olympics, and we've run through them all, is there a career highlight beyond the Olympics that we haven't covered that you kind of look back and go, that was really special? I mean, you've won a lot of different events and you've had some spectacular success. Is there anything beyond Olympic gold, Olympic silver and all your Olympic experiences that stands out to you in your career?
Yeah, I think in a career there are always races which don't stand out to other people, like probably from the placing they are not that good. Like let's say in the lead up to Beijing, to the Olympics in Beijing 2008, I was injured, I had a knee injury. And all I could do before the qualifying race was running uphill. That was all, like downhill wouldn't work and flat wouldn't work. I could just run uphill. So Brett, of course, as he is, he said, well, no problem. We are in the Philippines and you just take a taxi, you run uphill and then the taxi will drive you down. And so I was running uphill, taxi would drive me down, was running uphill again. And that was my preparation for the qualifying race in Ishigaki. I think I got sixth there and I was so happy and just proud because I had a lot of pressure to do that qualification. I wasn't prepared well, obviously, and I performed really well, even if for outside people, like obviously if you see that sixth place, it's nothing special. And I think a lot of such races where I was just really happy with my performance and how I handled the situation and handled the pressure, yes, are also worth a lot and a great experience, even if you can't really see it with a medal hanging around your neck. What was always special for me was the European Championships. I can't really say why, but I love the Europeans. And obviously, yes, I won it 6 times and there were also European Games I won. And I think I'm always proud to race for Switzerland as well, for my country. So if it's Olympics or European Championships or World Championships, I love those races. And those are really good memories to think back on.
Isn't it interesting when you look at your resume and Laura, you probably have the same, I have the same, where you kind of go, I remember what I had to go through to get that second, that third, that sixth, like you mentioned. And nobody ever knows what you went through to get to that start line. And you go, and I actually pulled something together. And nobody else cares. Yes. But it means something to me. Yeah.
Don't get the mic unless you won, right?
Yeah.
Don't get the mic unless you won.
Nobody's going to listen to you. Yeah. I know. But that's great. I appreciate you sharing that, because I think it is important that we recognize it's, yes, the winning is very special, but it's also the journey and the process and overcoming obstacles.
Definitely. Just to get this definitely. Or like after my third child, when I still thought the Olympics took place in 2020, like before COVID times. Yeah. I had my Alexis, our third child, in 2019 in April, and I had to qualify for the Olympics, and I knew it would be so close, like just no time to qualify. And I was doing the World Championship Series race in Hamburg about 12 weeks after giving birth. And it was so early, and I was actually just doing it to help the team qualify, because there was the mixed team relay worlds there. It gave a lot of points for the team qualifying for the Olympics. And I thought, well, I might as well start at the single individual race as well. In the end, I got eighth there, and I was so happy and so relieved, because it was such a surreal experience. Like, I was caring about was that the baby wasn't hungry when I was racing, and I could feed him before and after. And it was kind of funny, because I had such different problems to all the other athletes there. It was a fun experience, and I will always remember. Yeah, as you say, those special moments where no one else can really see what you're going through, but for yourself, it's really good memories, and you will always remember those times.
Yeah, what you're capable of.
Yeah,
the balance,
the resilience, and the adaptability is incredible. Yeah. It really is. I'm so impressed with all of you. All of the moms out there, and then to do what you're doing is just incredible. Okay, what I want to do now is I want to step into a bit of fun. Not that we haven't had much fun for the last hour, but 10 fun rapid fire questions. You up for that?
I hope so.
Okay, fast twitch fibers. Here we go. All right, Laura, you and I.
Well, there's an extra few seconds because I'm old, right? I'm not that fast anymore.
Yeah, we'll delay that because you're now training for Ironman.
Yes, exactly. Long distance now.
Yeah, long distance. Okay, I'll lead. Laura, you can then follow with the next one. Okay. What is your favorite family vacation? She's in Ironman.
How much time do I have?
He is not doing Olympic training anymore, people.
Family vacations are great anyway. Like, we just have been at the ocean. That's amazing. And but also skiing with the family is really cool. So I like both.
Okay, perfect. You can do both. Yeah. Laura, up.
Okay. What are you currently watching on Netflix or streaming?
I have been watching a kid series with my oldest son, because he was sleeping with me in the room before the race in Mallorca. So he was up early with me, and he said, what are we doing now? And I was like, well, watching movies. I said, yes. So I don't even know. I think it was the Dragon Prince or something, a kid series.
Good on you.
Those kids' movies are
all right. First car you owned?
That was a VW Golf, and I wasn't even allowed to drive yet. I had to still learn. It was my sponsor, and I had to learn how to drive. And obviously, I didn't own the car, and honestly, I never owned a car in my life yet. I was always sponsored my whole life since 18. So nice. I have yet to buy a car in my life.
Well done. Well done. You're going to have to keep that going. Do you hear that?
Take a lot to say that.
Who are you with now? Who's your car sponsor now?
Land Rover.
Oh, okay. So you're just doing rubbish cars now.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Laura, you're up.
What are your two most used apps on your phone?
WhatsApp and Instagram, I think. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you could swap jobs with anyone else in the world, what would it be?
I don't want to swap jobs, otherwise I would do it. I think I have a great job.
No, yeah. Okay. Well, I wasn't prepared for that, but okay.
Well, if you want to swap jobs, you should do it. You should learn another job.
Yeah.
I like that. All right.
Just get it done, Greg.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about here today.
Seriously. I feel like I'm incredibly lazy with Nicola on this podcast. Just do it, Greg. Stop talking about it.
All right. Which would you rather do? Wash dishes, mow the lawn, clean the bathroom, or vacuum the house?
Well, I think wash dishes.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I do. I'm the same.
Really? Yeah. I know. Every guy on the show says mow the lawn, which I totally embrace.
Well, if you have a mowing machine you can sit on, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
True.
Well, you know what Ben Knut said? He said mow the lawn, and then he told me, oh, yeah, but, you know, we have fake grass, so I wouldn't have to do anything then.
I thought he has one of those roboters, you know, mowing by itself.
Yeah, so. Well, he might as well.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't even have to. All right, this question's probably redundant, but I'm going to ask it anyway. First job.
Yeah, that's true. I never had a job.
Greg's
pointing
at me.
Sounds familiar, Laura.
I don't think I ever had a job either.
Come on. Well, you were a professional athlete for 2 years, Nicola. So.
Yeah, that's true. Professional athlete, first job.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Which decade of music is the best?
I'm going to say skip that question because I'm not talking about music. No one knows what's on my iPod, and that's going to stay like it.
Oh, music is a personal thing. We can talk about it, kids, but we're not talking about what's on an iPhone.
Exactly.
Or what do you call iPhone?
That's private. That's secret. Good.
All right. I like that. That's a fair enough answer. All right. Where is somewhere you haven't been in the world that you'd like to go?
Oh, lots of places. I haven't been much to South America. I haven't been to the north of Europe, like Finland and Sweden much. So, and Africa, I haven't been to many places. So there's I love to travel. So there's lots of places I would still like to see.
Mm. Yeah, by the sound of it, you haven't really been anywhere, have you?
True.
It's always.
I mean, with sport, it's amazing, isn't it? You just go wherever the World Series is, and you turn up. People go, "Oh, you've traveled the world," and go, "Well, I've seen the Ishigaki Hotel."
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know.
The pool.
Ten times. And the pool, yes. All right,
greatest movie of all time.
I like Forrest Gump and I like Braveheart.
Good choices. Nice. I like both of those. Well done. Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with those. Well, that was it. That was a rapid fire. You did pretty well.
Yeah.
You probably answered it more like at a half Ironman type pace.
Oh, I got fast in the end.
You did get faster, or you declined to answer, which sped it up as well. Can we, before I let you go, can we do a little bit of a run through on, I want to know how you kind of operate on a daily basis, because managing the three kids, I guess on that, are the kids managing themselves? Because I know Rito wouldn't be bringing them up. So how is it going?
Are they raising
themselves? How in the world are you guys operating on a daily basis? Amazing. Take us through a typical day in the life of Nicholas Spirig. I guess it's probably not a typical day so much, but a training day, how does it operate between yourself and Rito and managing the kids?
Yes, exactly. I don't think there's a typical day. Like every day looks a bit different. But it's a mix. It's basically, I don't have a fixed training plan, but we see what the kids are up to if they're having school, like in normal school times. Now the two older ones are in school and kindergarten. The youngest one is still at home. And then I tell my coach what I'm up to with the kids, what I have to be, where I have to be, when I have to be for the kids and when I can train. Then he has to find the best training program to get the most out of the day. So that's basically what happens. I always try to either have breakfast with them or lunch. I definitely always have dinner with the family. And Reed also, he adapts to my day, to the kids' day. And so we see it as a privilege to have that life where I basically work, but I still see the kids after every training session, and he has a lot of time with the kids. So as parents, we have a lot of time with the kids, and probably also as a whole family, not whole days, but a lot of time during the day. So we see that as a big privilege to spend so much time with the kids. And also sometimes I tell my coach, well, today I need the afternoon off because we want to go to the zoo or we want to do something else. And luckily he accepts that. And it also, there's also the other scenario where he says, well, that session is pretty important or that day is pretty important. Then I adapt to the training and organizes the whole family. So it depends a bit on the day.
It's amazing how you guys, I mean, it is quite the team. Yourself, Rito, Brett, who else is a part of that team? Have you got managers or people helping you with the social media and all of that kind of, I mean, there's a lot more that goes on too.
Definitely. There's a huge team because obviously professional triathlon doesn't just exist out of training. It's also, as you say, social media, it's events, it's sponsors, it's interviews. So that needs to fit in somehow as well. It's not easy. It's especially, I think, the recovery with three kids is very difficult to manage.
Non-existent,
exactly. That's the right word. But it does need a huge team. Like if I wouldn't have, first of all, Rito, who helps a lot, who understands as a professional athlete himself in former years what it takes to be at the top, who is willing to support me in every way, I would have no chance to do what I do. But yes, there are a lot of people like my manager, Brett, who adapts everything, the whole training, both parents, his and mine, sponsors, bike mechanic, like a lot of people who just help and support, and without them it wouldn't be possible.
It's really quite incredible. Your sponsors that you have now, how many of them have sort of been with you throughout your career? Have you had a lot of long-term sponsors?
Yes, I had a lot of, it just one of them, well, the longest one is actually my bike mechanic. I think he sponsored me when I was 15 or something. So it's amazing, yes. He's really like, well, a good friend, of course, now as well. His twins are my godsons and everything. But I had a few really long sponsorships. Like now, a gas company is sponsoring me since 15 years. Another bank is sponsoring me since 10 years. So a lot of long-term sponsorships. And also what I really appreciate, like obviously through three pregnancies and coming back and injuries, and that has been quite amazing. Yes, I was always really lucky.
It's amazing, Switzerland. I was just thinking about that, you know, with some of your sponsors, with Cancellara, Federer, yourself, Daniela Riff. There's some real rock stars that come out of Switzerland. Yeah. It really is incredible. You guys, do you find yourself at many of the same events, all sort of the best in Switzerland? Do you often, I mean, not hang out, but you're kind of doing many of the same kind of things?
Some athletes you meet more and others less, but definitely it's always a highlight to meet the other athletes, if it's sports awards or other events. And we also, I'm for example, in a team which has a lot of different athletes from different sports. And that's so interesting, I think, for all the athletes, just to have this exchange with other athletes. And this way I was also like taking part in a bobsleigh World Cup once with one of those athletes.
I read that picture. I saw that. You guys came 16th or something. Yeah,
it was so interesting. And I can, you know, in the team there's also like bike riders like Stefan Küng, and I was asking him before the Olympics, like, what pressure do you put into the tires when it's raining? And they're really like, he was at the Tour de France and I was like, oh my god, I'm disturbing his race. But he was answering immediately and really like, oh, and this teammate is like 65 kilos, so he's probably more like you, and he puts that much pressure in. And I, so I was like, oh, okay,
that's great.
Thank you. Go back to your race now. yeah, but no, that's really, I find that really cool, like to meet the other athletes from other sports and to learn from them and to just have this exchange.
That's awesome. I've become friends with Nino Schurter,
yeah,
who came on the show last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Another great Swiss athlete. It really is quite incredible, the amount of incredible athletes coming out of Switzerland. It's amazing.
Yeah, so I think we are a small country and we probably don't have that support system which other countries have. And we need to build our own teams and our own support system. But if we manage to do that, it's quite well. I think that's why we might not have hundreds of athletes, but if we do have athletes, they are quite good and they come to the top.
It's very much like, I think Switzerland should take on New Zealand.
Yes, probably.
I kind of look at the two exactly. countries, fairly similar, yeah. You know, smaller populations, but seem to be able to
amazing
produce
athletes.
Constant great athletes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One final area I want to chat to you before we kind of go on is mental strategies. How have you been able to sort of manage that nervous energy? Because we've known you a long time and you always tended to be fairly nervous before events. Is it during a half Ironman, the morning of a race?
That's what is nicely said, Greg.
I mean, have you gotten better at managing that? Because you were.
Yes, I was extremely nervous. When I was young, I was crazy nervous, like, as a junior, I think I was 1 week before the race, I was already getting nervous. And of course, losing a lot of energy like that, like it's not, I think being a bit nervous is really good. I need to be nervous to have that adrenaline and to really show my best performance. But yeah, it was definitely over the top. I was way too nervous. I had to change. And I think Brett helped me there quite a lot to just calm me down in the way that he said, well, you can just do your best. If you do your best, you should be happy and I will be happy and everyone around you will be or has to be happy. They can't expect more of you than you do your best. And that is really simple, but it helped me and it still helps me if I'm getting too nervous. Sitting down at the quiet place and just calm down and say, well, all you need to do is do your best and that's it. No one should expect more of yourself. And that's something I can do in my mind, you know, that's what I always do in training. And so this simple sentence has helped me a lot to manage the nervousness and to calm down in the situation where I'm getting too nervous and I can feel that it's not healthy or not beneficial anymore.
It's like I think quite often when you're aiming for perfection, yeah, and that creates that anxiety because you want perfection.
Yeah.
You know, Laura, we talk about it a bit, don't we, with parenting. It's like there's no such thing as being a perfect mum.
Yeah.
Well, I have to keep reminding Laura of that.
No way.
Just do your best, Laura.
I've never been so committed to something and feel like you fail every day. it's like the ultimate responsibility of just wanting to, you know, perform.
I know what you mean.
I like that though. We'll all leave with that. Just do your best. Actually, I do want to ask you, can we finish with two questions before I let you go? I know we've kept you a long time, but it has been fun and really appreciate it. I'll ask you two questions. What is one tip you have for people on how to optimize their life?
I really think you should always follow your dreams and try to achieve your goals. And even if they're big and even if they seem to not being able to achieve it, and even if you do not achieve it at sometimes, I think the way there is always worth it. Like you get so many experiences, you learn so much on the way there that in the end it sometimes doesn't even matter if you reach your goal or not. The way there was, to me, always whatever I really wanted and really put my passion and energy in, it was worth like following my dreams and my goals.
I like that. It's like you set the goal so you can have the journey, and it is all, it's all about the journey, isn't it? But you can't have the journey if you don't know where you're going.
Yeah.
So put something out there and go towards it.
Yeah, it needs to be something you really want to and have the passion for it and want to want to achieve. But sometimes, well, you can't control all the circumstances and everything. So sometimes it doesn't happen. Yes, I do think to me it was always worth going the way they, even no matter if I reached the goal in the end or not.
I love that.
Yeah, very good. Okay, if you could sit and have a coffee with any living person, who would it be and why?
My husband. We were so busy.
I haven't seen him since that damn Olympic gold medal.
That is fantastic.
I see him a lot, but normally we always have our kids around or something to discuss or whatever. So to sit down with him and just have a quiet coffee and some nice time, yeah, at the moment that would be the person I would sit down with.
We can totally relate to that.
That is such a great answer. I think every parent listening is going, nodding, going, yep. Best answer I've heard.
I sit next to this person around me all the time.
Yes. I see him all the time, but I don't really sit down with him and have coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. All right, Nicola, this has been fantastic. What's next for you? You wrapped up the year. Have you got any more racing? Or
yeah, no, I think that was the last race. I'm happy with the season and just having some time at home. It will stay quite busy with some events and stuff, and then concentrate on the training for Sub 8 next year.
Fantastic. Well, I'm so glad we made this happen. Laura was so excited. Laura, you haven't been on the show for quite a few months, so this was nice to come back. Nicola, thank you again for your time, just sharing all your journey and just your experiences and your knowledge. It's absolutely fantastic. So thank you again.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you too. It was nice to talk to you after 9 years. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can see all the show notes, timestamps, links, and coupon codes at bennettendurance.com/media. All right. Thanks again, Nicola. Stay on the line.
Thanks a lot for listening. If you enjoyed the show, your support would truly be appreciated. You can visit the Patreon page or you can subscribe with your podcast app of choice. Don't miss the next episode, so subscribe and be notified. For show notes, if you want to know more, please visit bennettendurance.com. I'm Phil Liggett, and on behalf of Greg Bennett, here's to the next time, and I hope you will join Greg again very soon.